Welcome to episode 28 of Kuiperian Commentary Podcast. I'm your host, Yuri Brito. I know it's been a long time, but it's good to be back, especially with my good friend, Dustin Nestor. Dustin, how are you?
Hey, man, I'm good. Welcome back to the United States.
Thank you very much, brother. Dustin, I want to talk about an article that you wrote about a couple weeks ago, and it might seem a little dated, but when you hear the topic, our listeners hearing the topic, we realize just how relevant it is. The "These Are Animals" story was misreported because we're vultures. That's the title of your article there. What did you mean by that title? What motivated you to write about that?
That was a Plan B title. Yeah. Brood of vipers wouldn't fit.
Right.
I think it was vultures is a close second. Yeah, so it was the story, and you're right. The news cycle moves so fast that something a week old or 2 weeks old seems really dated. But it's a good test case. So President Trump, it was reported and sort of widely condemned that he called people crossing over the borders animals. And it really was met just on Twitter and Facebook and really legitimate news sites like the New York Times and CNN reported this story. And then as you listen to the context of it, as it was sort of widely acknowledged, later he was talking about gang members from like MS-13 or something. He was specifically calling them animals, it seemed. And so it was a really good test case for quote-unquote fake news, because it wasn't exactly that the news was wrong, right? So these gang members were coming across the border illegally, so they were technically right to say Trump calls these people crossing the borders animals, but he was talking about a specific subset of people crossing the border, namely gang members. And so it's really just interesting test case for what's going on. So it's not exactly fake news, quote unquote, because it's not exactly news that's wrong. Rather, it's news built to confirm biases that we already have. And so I wrote something sort of explaining that what I thought was sort of the origin of fake news, and it seems to me just to be a subject that is in need of more sort of deep and thoughtful reflection than the level at which we've been thinking about it.
Right. So we use that language, and for many listeners, we might get the impression that this language was coined by Donald Trump, but there's a fake news has always been in existence, right?
Yeah, exactly. So especially if we think of fake news as sort of just confirming biases that we already sort of hold. So a great example, another test case a little bit earlier, was the Southwest Airlines flight 1380 that had to do the emergency landing.
Yeah, right.
And I wrote about this in the piece that on CNN, the sort of top story was hero pilot, a woman, of course, and there's a picture of her hair flowing in the wind. And then at the same time at Fox News, the head story was hero in a cowboy hat, with a picture of this guy in a cowboy hat. Now, both those things were true. There was a woman who very heroically and ably knew how to land the plane, and apparently there was a guy in a cowboy hat who did some heroic things back in the plane. And so both those things happened. The issue was both Fox and CNN knew that their readers wanted to see a hero like them.
Right.
So this is kind of benign, right? We want to see heroes that look like us. The problem is we also, sort of the flip side of that coin is, we want to see villains who don't look like us. And so we have media that's very quick to villainize the other side and very slow to recognize rightness and goodness and heroism on the other side.
Mm-hmm.
And the reason I think it's just a good test case is because, again, neither of those are like fake information. They're both true. But the goal of the journalism wasn't to convey something we didn't know. It was to say the heroes are what you want them to be.
Right. Dustin, that brings up an interesting question in an age where we hear and have access to information and data in such a prolific manner. What responsibility do we as Christians who are engaged in social media, for example, what responsibility that we have in regards to verify information before we share it with the world, which is exactly what we're doing, right? Once something is posted on Facebook or Twitter or wherever, we're immediately giving the world access to a particular way of looking at the world.
Yeah, that's exactly right. I heard Tim Keller say the other day in John Murray's book on ethics, it's called Principles of Conduct, maybe. He says, if you pass along information that you think is true, but later turns out not to be true, he says you have a certain moral culpability in passing on the spread of that lie. And I think that's right. It's tough to know exactly how to verify something. So, I mean, this story was reported on CNN and the New York Times, and you know there were many people who were rightly outraged when they saw the headline, because I too would be really outraged if the president called people crossing the border sort of carte blanche.
Right.
Animals, I'd be really offended too. So what role do we have in verifying information? Well, I think for one thing we could step back from verify and just say we should have sort of questioning disposition towards news. And by questioning, not just questioning the sources or the other person, really questioning ourselves. You know, what delight do we get out of the news when we see a hero who just looks like us or a villain who doesn't look like us? And I think it's incumbent upon us, just as we approach the world, to say it is quite possible that that people who I vehemently disagree with or who are the other side of the political spectrum have something good and right to say, and there are people on my team could be wrong. And so I think one of the sort of causes for this is during election seasons, it's really easy to just view politics as team sports,
right,
where, you know, your team, you're trying to get points on the board. And whatever you do to get points on the board, just get points on the board. And then the other side, you're trying to prevent them from getting points on the board, right? The problem, and you can understand that in election season, the problem is once the election's over, if you still view politics as a team sport, then you're going to be really disincentivized to ever recognize the goodness in another argument or the wrongness in your own argument, precisely because it will give the other team points or your team points. And I think as Christians, we should step back and see the goal of politics, the goal of our lives, isn't just power, isn't just getting points on the board. But it's truth. And if, you know, Jesus' kingdom isn't of this world, it's sort of okay if we lose in a temporal sense, points on the board and so forth, because my eschatology and your eschatology says we can be hopeful.
Exactly.
And it's not because we're going to be really deft at learning how to use the media. It's because Jesus is conquering.
Dustin, what you said raises all sorts of questions. I think we can even talk about in another podcast, questions regarding, you know, the use of social media, you know, the wisdom of it. But the question of fake news is an interesting one because it necessarily brings in the question of consumption. How should a Christian consume this absurd amount of data being given out? I mean, I know of individuals who have simply stopped reading any of the classic newspapers, friends who have chosen particular websites that are far from being well-known, but they have chosen these websites as the source of all their knowledge about a particular issue. And sometimes the website title itself will indicate what kind of, you know, worldview they have. How are we to consume the data as evangelical Christians? And I ask you that question, affirming from the beginning that I tend to consume data very one-sidedly. At the same time, I'm aware of my presuppositions. And because I'm aware of it, and because I have firm convictions of what I believe to be true about the world, I feel very confident in reading the New York Times, for example, or Time Magazine. So talk a little bit about the idea of consumption in a Christian perspective.
Well, I think you brought up a lot of good points in terms of consuming from right and left and a balance there. But I think something else to consider is the depth at which we consume media. You know, Chesterton has that great line where he says, if you make the trivial things overly serious, you make the serious things overly trivial by necessity. And he's talking there about sort of Sabbath observance. And, you know, if you take football or soccer or something really seriously, then of course you'll wind up, you know, missing church to go on, to go to a football game on Sunday.
Because right.
Once you've made football super serious, you've made church really frivolous. And the same is true, I think, with the news. You know, we do have a mass of information and, as you say, data coming at us. But at the same time, I think it's a mass of very, very, very trivial in a lot of ways information. And so I just think it behooves Christians and really all thoughtful people to be on the lookout, not just for sort of the inside baseball of politics that, you know, CNN and Fox and everybody knows we really want to hear, right? We really want to know about, like, what Stormy Daniels thinks now or whatever. And yet, the trivial things we take seriously, and then a lot of serious things we don't take very seriously, and so this probably isn't the exact answer that you're looking for, but I've really tried to be more attuned to local news, mm-hmm. and not just local politics, but local news generally. Our Major Garrett, who I think is at CBS now, he was at the Amarillo Globe News. I'm from Amarillo, Texas, so that interests me, and he said the most important story he ever wrote was this very local, humane, family, almost domestic type article that he wrote in Amarillo because it was so personal. And I think staying on top of sort of, you know, for me, Dallas news, or for you, Pensacola, like, you know, if it went up to 67 degrees or whatever news y'all report in Pensacola, being on top of that. Because ultimately, that stuff I can actually be involved with.
Right, you know? Right.
Yeah.
Dustin, this is a really fascinating conversation. I think the topic fake news, you know, has all sorts of connotations. But I think there's a real gem there in this conversation. It's a direct attack on the idea of what Francis Schaeffer referred to as true truth. And so we're dealing with a kind of news that portrays itself as true and very easily is imbibed by the, shall I say, the drunk spectator who just wants data to fit into his way of looking at the world. But the Christian ought to be a lot more thoughtful, a lot more creative, a lot more combative when it comes to data being thrown at him. If he's being thrown, you know, 10 types of information, a Christian has the opportunity there to begin to develop and think through his worldview more carefully. But the reality is, at least from my perception, Dustin, is that the opposite is happening, is that we're becoming more careless in the way we process data and information. In other words, because Christians are being bombarded with so much information, we have abandoned our critical thinking and we have just consumed data in a very careless fashion.
I think that's exactly right. You know, I think one thing Christians can do, and specifically pastors maybe, is in a media that so accentuates rhetoric and trying to persuade, I think it's incumbent upon us to just have, you know, an educated populace that sort of accepts, at first level, grammar of facts, and then the logic of facts, and then make persuasive cases for various things. There can be honest disagreements, but it seems to me that insofar as we don't have a shared grammar, a shared sense of this is what truth is, you know, you said Schaeffer's famous quote about true truth, insofar as we don't agree on sort of base facts of here is what true truth is, then of course we'll have different logic, and of course all of the rhetorical pieces trying to persuade one another will ultimately be unsuccessful because we're appealing to a set of facts, a grammar that we don't agree upon. And so as Christians, we share, you know, not fake news, we share good news.
Right.
And this good news of the gospel, yes, it makes people into a relationship with God, but it also explains and really invites you into a relationship with God's world. Mm. So now, not only do you, you know, sort of have an understanding of guilt and grace and how the cross and resurrection and ascension aligns you to that grace, but also how you're aligned to the very fabric of the world. And so, again, I just think it behooves us to be true truth tellers of the world and really view this crisis not as one external to ourselves, you know, as if there's some sort of grandmaster at CNN or something who's pulling strings, but really view the problem as eminently personal. And the best thing we can do is try to help our fellow man see the world. I don't even like saying seeing it Christianly. I mean, I do want him to see it Christianly, but I want to see it truly, fundamentally, and that will be Christian. That will be Christianly. So I think that's what we can do. I'd love to hear from you. You know, as a pastor, how do you help your people think through such a turbulent political time and a turbulent time in media as well, and just interpreting facts of the world? What role do you see yourself playing?
Well, we play the traditional classical prophetic role. We speak truth, and on a very practical level, I think as pastors, one way we can help our parishioners to think through these issues more carefully is to not allow them to get by or get away with simple ways of looking at the world. So there are moral issues that are simple, right? You shall not murder. These very clear commands that are simple. But the majority of news are require a certain level of interpretation that is a bit more critical and a bit more thoughtful than what these and I'll refer them as fake websites, would like to declare. And so I think one way we begin to talk to our parishioners is to avoid drinking from data that is generally corrupted or doesn't have any kind of peer review or any kind of system where the information can be checked. And so I think that's important. I think we do have some classic locations and sources that we can go to get something a bit more. You know, I think we've become so conspiratorial in the way we look at the world that we have abandoned those classic, those tested and tried methods of doing analysis. And I mean, for example, you look at just a standard liberal example like the New York Times. At any point there is any new data given, you'll see at the end of each essay or article a correction section. You know what I'm talking about? And so in the regular websites, like, there's several examples here that pop up on my Facebook feed that have that kind of peer review or that kind of accountability just doesn't exist. And I think to me, that's one way of testing that what we're reading is healthy or if it's just propaganda, you know, propaganda from one side of the aisle or the other. So I think we teach our congregation to avoid simple answers to complex issues. And then the second principle is a very simple one, but I think it's for us not to jump to conclusions too quickly right after a news cycle. Yeah. Because as you and I know quite well, within a space of an hour, we'll have information about something that is just mere speculation. And in a day or two, we'll have more data. And so my general principle is just to wait 3 days before we come to a kind of attempt to analyze a situation. And we can talk about it, but when we talk about formal speech and formal writing, it's very important that we understand that the news cycle comes with various agendas. And when news breaks, it doesn't necessarily mean that whatever is said about it is accurate. Yeah. It just means they're reporting something with a certain perspective. So you can report there is a shooting in a certain school, but the details of it are not fully given immediately. And I think we're very prone, our parishioners and even myself, we're very prone to make assessment of the situation seconds after something has been revealed. And I think a good way to think through the issue of news is to give it a little bit time before it's reported or before you make a definite announcement on the matter. Those are just a couple of thoughts that comes to mind, Dustin.
Yeah, super helpful. And you know who thought really critically and deeply and well about the Christian relationship to news is Abraham Kuyper.
Absolutely.
Patron saint of Kuyperian commentary. And so on that note, let's put a plug in. If you would like a good place, a good website that interprets and does try to make persuasive case for a particular angle, Kyperion Commentary is one of many places that tries to give an honest and fair and Christian interpretation of the world.
Dustin, enjoy talking to you. If you'd like to read the article that Dustin has been referencing here, just go on Kyperion.com and find the author page. Click Dustin, and immediately will pop up his latest article, and you can read a host of other articles he's written over the years. Always very helpful and insightful. Dustin, hey, thanks for your time, and hope we do this again very soon.
Absolutely. Thanks, Brent.